The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this super awesome birthday special episode of the Mind Pump, happy birthday, Doug.
Thank you.
All right, so we talk all about fitness in this episode, but before we do, we have our fun introductory conversation. Here's what we talked about in the first 38 minutes. We start out by talking about our summer trips, which are coming up. I'm going to Yellowstone. Justin's going to Palm Desert in the summer. That's weird.
I'm
going to
fry.
And Adam's having a baby shower wedding, apparently.
Yeah.
Lots of people.
A baby wedding.
Then we talked about the show on HBO called Chernobyl. Apparently, it's really good. It's getting a lot of press. Yeah. Adam brings up Agatha Christie's ABC Murders on Amazon Prime. That looks fun. Justin talks about his Uller made by Chili Pad. This goes on your bed, and it controls the temperature of your bed, leaving it nice and cool for improved sleep. In fact, studies show that some people sleep in half the time it normally takes them to fall asleep when they use this kind of technology. And we got you guys a huge discount. Here's what you do. Go to chilitechnology.com. That's C-H-I-L-I technology.com/mindpump. Go on that page. You'll see the codes for the discounts. For the Chili Pad, it's MP. Chili Pad, that'll give you 25% off. For the Uller, which is the one that you can control with the app on your phone, use the code MPUller for 15% off. Then we talked about Toys R Us coming back.
Yeah, don't call it a comeback.
Oh, I can't wait. Justin talked about something where apparently hyenas are in Canada. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
We talked Weird. About a new book called The Sixth Man by, how do you say his name, Adam? Iguodala?
Yes.
I said it right.
Good
yes.
job.
Also, Mind Pump Live tickets on sale for San Francisco. It'll be going on July 12th. Go to mindpumplive.com, or you can wait for July 26th in Seattle. Then we get into the fitness portion of this episode. First question, you know, we talk a lot about intuitive eating, but if you want to really get lean or build a lot of muscle, should you go back to tracking your food intake, or should you just consciously reduce or add food? Next question, we give our thoughts on protective gear like elbow and knee wraps or sleeves. We talk all about their benefits and their detriments. The next question, this person has a mental block for heavy lifts. She's afraid to get under a heavy bar and do a heavy squat. We give her advice on how you can feel more confident about pushing your body with heavy weight because, you know, heavy weight builds the most muscle. And the final question, this person wants to know if we've ever dealt with depression. We all have, so we share our stories. But we also talk about what it was like to train people who were depressed and the things that we found that helped them. Of course, we're not doctors, but we do have experience training people in different varieties and forms. Also, 48 hours left for the MAPS Strong 50% off sale. That's it. There's only 2 days left. Now, remember, MAPS Strong is our most effective muscle building metabolism boosting program to date. It's 50% off. Here's what you do. Go to mapsstrong.com, mapsstrong.com, and use the code STRONG50, STRONG50, without a space, for the discount. Make sure you do it soon, because again, this sale's going to be gone, and this promotion will not come back this year.
Get on it.
Tomorrow, Adam, you have the massive baby shower.
We're calling it the baby wedding.
Baby wedding. I like it.
It's baby apocalypse.
It's that
like
formal.
It's like a baby wedding.
Yeah, just a close, you know.
Yeah, a real tight group of like
150
something.
People.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's RSVP'd. Like, knowing Katrina and her crazy family, you know, and people are already asking her. So she did like a, I think we're doing like 12 to 4 or some of that. Yeah. And so everyone's like, we don't really have to leave at 4, do we? I'm like, oh, great. This is going to get crazy.
Oh, good times. Yeah. And then, Justin, what are you doing?
I'm out, man.
Yeah, I know, but where are you going?
I'm going to Palm Desert.
Oh.
What's in Palm Desert?
Palm Desert's the a great place to go in the summer, huh?
A lot of swingers.
Yeah. No, that's Palm Springs, dude.
Which is
close by.
Oh, I was going to say, it's not the same area?
No, it is.
It is. It's right next to it.
Drive through it.
So you guys going to do some swinging this weekend?
Totally. And bringing the kids. Wow. That would be weird.
Yeah, very weird. Yeah.
No, and you're going to stay there for the whole week?
Yeah. Well, not the whole week. But yeah, I mean, we're going to be doing stuff like probably like going down to San Diego a bit and then also going to Disneyland.
Now, where do you stay in Palm Desert? Do you stay at the Marriott there?
Typically, yeah, we do the Marriott. But
is that the one with the gondola inside?
Yeah. That's the one. Yeah, my parents had like a timeshare, and so we used to weasel off of that. But we're actually this time... Courtney's sister, she has a place, and so we're staying at her place. She's somewhere else, I think in Boston, so we're going to be using her place, which is going
to
be cool.
You know, I used to live there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I know. You told me that, and I was, trying to get the name of the gym that you used to manage there.
Yeah, it was Palm Desert Athletic Club. I don't think it exists anymore. It was on Lennon Place. It's behind the post office. So if you go there, see if it's there.
I will go there, work out, and take a pic. Yes. And be like, I'm in Sal's stomping grounds.
We had rock climbing, and we had a wine bar in there.
Isn't it known for nudist colonies all over there?
Dude, the desert people are weird in general.
Summertime down there is very strange. Because in the wintertime, it's popping. There's lots of people. The weather's great. In the winter, it's like 85 degrees every day. 75 to 85 degrees. Summertime, it gets 120 degrees.
Yeah.
Death.
Like normal. Like you wake up, no joke, I would wake up at 6 a.m. to go to work. 6 a.m., it was 90 degrees outside. Didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And half the population is gone.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people have houses there that just go in the winter.
Yeah, so the snowbirds.
So you go to the mall and you can see tumbleweeds.
It's not ideal the time, but it's that was in the schedule. So, but we're before we looked at the weather and everything, it was 110, 112, crazy. But now it's 101, 102.
It's a cool one.
That's more tolerable. My shoes won't melt to the ground.
So there was a nightclub that we used to always party at in Palm Desert. I think it was called Bananas. It's either Bananas or Zelda's.
It's kind of like a gay club.
Yeah, it does sound like that.
It was weird. No girls were ever there, though. Yeah. It's so strange.
Totally, you're seeing.
Everybody's friendly, though. Everybody's really, really friendly.
Yeah, real cool. Real cool.
Shirts are optional.
Yeah, everybody was feeling happy until Happy left.
Lots of dance trains going on. Hey.
Boom. Anyway. Hey, no, it's a good town, though. I like that town. And Palm Springs is a cool town, too.
So you're there the whole time, Justin?
Yeah, I'll be there pretty much the whole time. Yeah.
We're going to fly.
No, nobody asked you.
Oh, my bad.
Moving on.
Yeah. Anyway.
I'm just kidding, bro. Tell us what you're doing.
You got cool ideas, too. Don't worry.
I don't want to tell you anymore.
Come on, tell us what you're doing.
Yeah. Remember when you were little and your friends like fuck with you and you pretend like it didn't hurt your feelings, but
yeah,
it did?
Yeah.
I'm cool.
Whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, I want to go home real quick.
I'm going to take my bike.
I got crazy allergies.
My mom's calling me.
Yeah, I got to go.
Are you crying?
Yeah, I got to take my ball. Man, I got to take my football. I can't leave it here with you guys.
My eye itches.
No, we're going to Yellowstone. So we're going to go into the north entrance.
That's right.
Of Yellowstone, then we're going to be in the west entrance of Yellowstone. So we're going to spend time in both places, and then we're going to drive down to Vail, Colorado, for a wedding. And I heard it's beautiful in Vail. I've never been there.
It is beautiful up there. What are you most excited about Yellowstone? I've always wanted to go to Yellowstone. What are you most excited to see?
I just want to see. I want to see buffalo in their natural habitat. I want to. It would be cool to see a bear.
Bears. Yeah,
dude. If I saw a bear,
you will.
You know, I have a thing with bears, right? Will.
You do?
Yes. Come on, bro. I told you
the
story.
That's the theme of the baby shower.
Bears.
Yeah, bears.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Are you gonna have an actual bear there?
There's gonna be a bear cave there.
Wow.
What do you mean a cave?
Her sister built a bear cave.
What's a bear cave?
Yeah. I saw it the other day. So this is how fucking ridiculous this thing has gotten. Like we stopped by
my God.
Her brother and sister's house, and they had scoured their property and gathered all of these branches and built a cave. It's literally from Doug to you and a cone all the way back, like a cave out of tree branches.
Do you think that you guys are
like a Sadie Hawkins dance for photos.
Do you think that there's like a little bit of overdoing it? Like a little?
Oh,
a smidgen?
We passed that like the day it was decided we were going to do it. The stuff that like... There's some cool shit though too. That like
I bet mean, you guys are giving away gifts to the guests and their gangster gifts. Bro, everybody gets Nikes.
It's getting stupid.
Yeah.
Out of control. Out of control.
That's awesome.
I still eating bear claws.
What I don't know and what I don't know if I believe is that we are not spending any money. She keeps claiming to me like, no, hon, we haven't spent any money. We haven't spent any money. But I'm not like, you know, I'm not a Nazi about it. I don't go in her bank accounts and check all that shit. Like I just trust it when she says that, but I don't know if I believe her.
Wow.
Yeah. I think she's sliding some money back there to make sure
she's got cash.
Yeah. Yeah. I think she's,
you don't know about?
Yeah. I think she's funneling money over the years. She definitely
greasing
does.
Off all the, yeah. Employees.
No, I want to see a bear, dude. I want to see an actual bear, but I have a thing with bears because remember I told you guys when I think I was like 12 or 13, I got chased by a bear. So yeah, bears and I are, there's a, what is that? Like mortal enemies.
Now, Yellowstone, wow. Yellowstone, grizzly there.
Grizzly.
Right. So if you go to like Yosemite, you can see a black bear.
Black bears are scared. Black bears are the pussies of the bear kingdom.
Right.
They'll still fuck you up.
Oh, yeah. No, they'll kick your ass, but they're scared because they evolved with predators. They evolved with grizzlies, and grizzly would eat them. So they get scared with loud noises and shit. Do you know what happens when you make a loud noise around a grizzly?
It chase you.
Fucks you up.
Yeah.
It just kills you.
You guys remember when we interviewed the guy who got attacked by a grizzly bear?
That was crazy.
I got to go back and revisit that.
He had the biggest balls of anybody
crazy
ever.
Story.
Dude. I couldn't believe that story.
That was a crazy story.
Yeah. So I hope to see that. I hope to see the buffalo. I want to see, of course, the geyser. And there's a segment of Yellowstone where it's just, it looks like another planet. Yeah. I've seen pictures of it. I don't know.
Dude, give us a sense of, the apocalypse, though. Because that place could blow and we're all going
with it. It's a super volcano, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what a super volcano is?
I don't know. What's the difference between a regular volcano and a super volcano?
It's super.
It wears a cape.
Yeah.
No. Super volcano, just the size of them, the sheer size. And it's active. And so at some point in the future, we don't know when, could happen 10,000 years from now, could happen next month, highly unlikely. But at some point, it will go off. And when it does, everybody's dead.
Yeah. Wow.
Everybody.
So
like,
then
like the U.S. will be gone. It'll be, and then the whole world will be covered with so much.
So all these people,
shit that, yeah, it'll drop the temperatures,
change the
Earth.
Entire climate, everything.
Yeah. So the irony of all these people that were listening to the Almost 30 podcast that bought all their earthquake protection,
going
to
help them for sure.
Volcano's just going to fuck.
You're worried about the wrong thing, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
No, and you know what's funny is that the animals. I just read an article. It's funny because I'm going over there. Right, I was joking with Jessica. They're observing that the animals are, for whatever reason, moving away from the volcano part of Yellowstone.
You lie.
I swear to God.
Really?
I told Jessica, I was like, wow, we're gonna get a front row seat if the shit goes off, you know what I mean?
Oh wow.
Like, oh wow, look at that.
If something like that were to go off and it were to just cook the United States, would you want a front row seat or would you rather
you might as well.
Delayed dead.
Yeah, what would you do for reals? What would you do if all of a sudden you're like, and this is like a real deal news thing, and you're like, in 24 hours, everyone's going to be dead and there's nothing you could do about it.
I would drive to the ocean and start swimming out. I mean,
start digging a hole.
You're not going to be able to book a plane, let's be honest. So no. All the assholes I think they're going to be.
Where are you going
to fly? Well, you would try to fly somewhere.
Space?
Yeah. Nowhere.
Yeah. Well, eventually it's going to go hit the ocean and then would cool.
No. Here's the deal.
The volcano would be that big, it would just blow up the whole Earth?
No.
Come on, bro.
That's not how it works. So, yeah. It'll blow up a large part of the U.S., but then the blast and the heat and all that stuff will destroy lots of surrounding stuff. But then what ends up happening is
you won't be able to breathe.
It shoots so much toxic shit into the atmosphere. It'll surround the Earth. It'll lower the Earth's temperature by enough degrees to where it'll kill plants, then it'll kill animals, then the fallout, all that stuff. It'll kill most life on Earth.
Most.
You got to go to Area 51 and get underground, like way underground.
Yeah, NORAD.
Like a nuclear fallout?
Yeah. NORAD.
Would you want to do that and come out?
No.
Well, yeah. Better than dying.
What's left up there?
Then you need to come out and everyone's gone.
Well, I mean, hopefully you go in there with a couple of your friends.
Yeah, then you're stuck with just them. I love you guys. But
there's the whole repopulating process. That's a positive.
Oh, shit.
You know what I mean?
Better bring some people.
Very hope at least there's some winners in there.
Ladies, we got to save you guys. All you guys get in here real quick. Guys, go out there.
I got only two more spaces.
Exactly.
Bro, you got to sit this one out.
Hey, start off a meeting with all the survivors. Like, okay, so, we have a big responsibility on our shoulders.
Yeah.
We need to make sure that the human species survives.
I feel like my strategy is the best. Come on.
Swim out in the ocean?
Yeah.
Start swimming?
How far are you going to swim? You'll drown.
I got 24 hours. I can get pretty far.
I'll
get a canoe. You know, say I get a canoe and start paddling.
The great whites are going to make a snack out of you. Yeah. They're going to eat you.
You think so?
Yeah. Because they're going to be like, oh, I got to get lunch before I die. You know?
They won't even know. Anyways. So,
weird.
But yeah, no, I'm excited to go there, see the largest national park in America, and then, of course, head down to Colorado to.
Now, it's so big that it should take you more than a day even to like go through the whole thing, right?
It would take you more than that. It would take you maybe even. It's so big. If you drove through the whole thing, it would take you, I think, a day.
Yeah,
you have to just to drive through it to see the whole thing. You could book a whole week vacation just to do that.
Now, are you either you or Jessica like big into photography, or will either one of you have a camera or anything?
She has a camera and she's been big into it before. I don't know. That's a good question. I'll see if she wants to take her camera and do that.
Yeah, you guys should do something like that. Mm-hmm. Just made me think when I'm asking that question. When a lot of times when we go places, we'll always put a post out there, tell people, hey, is there any local photographers that would want to shoot some of the events? And then people like apply and you know, Taylor and Rachel have to go through all this stuff. And I remember talking to one. And they were like, hey, this kid, we're thinking about doing this kid with that. And then they, of course, one of the last questions they asked before they agree to let them come shoot is, what kind of camera are you shooting with? So we know. An iPhone 9, you know, that's what you're shooting with.
No way.
Yeah. Somebody offered
iPhone
to.
9.
Yeah, I don't know if I told you guys that. Yeah, somebody offered to shoot one of our events with their iPhone.
Wow. Oh,
that's cool. I mean, the iPhone shoots great photos.
It's really gotten better, guys. You should check this out.
That's why he's just walking around like this.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Speaking of the events, Denver sold out.
Yeah,
oh,
gone.
Yeah, it's sold out.
The only ones
snooze, you lose, everybody.
Which ones are left? San Francisco
and Seattle. Yeah.
And Seattle.
Seattle is also almost sold out. The one that surprises me is San Francisco still got, I think, a good 15 to 20 spots, I think, left on San Francisco, which is in our backyard. What mm-hmm. the fuck?
Hey, man.
What's up with your friends?
I'm on Bay Area.
What's up with your friends, Justin?
Where's our Bay Area people?
Well, whatever. If there's some left over, I'll bring
them. Are they my friends?
I got family that'll want to come. It'll be great if I have my cousins in the audience, too. I'll make sure they laugh at me and not you guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
a joke, but don't laugh when Adam or Justin make a joke.
Just crickets.
Only me.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's mindpumplive.com. So if you're listening right now and you want to check out some of these live events.
Dude, I've been watching this crazy. Remember I told you I was going to start watching Chernobyl? I think it's on HBO.
Hella people are talking about that show.
It's crazy because you get like an insight to how everything went down. And just how...
What is that? I'm clueless right now.
Do you know what Chernobyl is?
No, tell me.
You don't know in history what happened?
No, please tell me.
So in the Soviet Union...
I told you I'm terrible with history.
Yeah, at the time...
And geography.
At the time...
And science.
Okay. At the time, you had the Soviet Union at this time, and they had a nuclear reactor in this particular town, Chernobyl. And I don't remember what happened. I think it was they were doing some tests.
It's spelled C-H-E-N.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, okay. I've seen that.
They were doing some routine tests and something
like
went haywire.
In the 70s, right?
And they found that it was like sabotaged because like through the protocol, basically, like they were just trying to cover up all their tracks. Like the government was getting involved and trying not to let, you know, public knowledge of how bad everything was like get out. And it just goes through this whole process of them trying to deny, you know, how the severity of what they're dealing with. And then you see people going there and just getting like horrifically burned by all this radiation and just like all the officials that were trying to, you know, come back and cover it up and then watch what everybody says to the public and then evacuate certain people.
Bro,
it was so fucking crazy.
One of the worst disasters in world history. It went, I mean, it, you know, you had a nuclear meltdown it became so toxic. We can't go. You still can't go there.
No, you still can't.
Yeah, I don't think you can go there for like another 1,000 years or something silly like that.
What?
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be toxic for a long time.
Dude, these
time.
Miners, I got to like, this is episode 3 or whatever, but they had to hire a group of miners to come kind of dig underneath it to...
It was a suicide mission.
Yeah, it was a suicide because like basically, if not, the core was going to melt all the way down and then get into the water supply and then like basically get all the way out to the Black Sea and fucking contaminate like everybody's water and everything and kill everybody.
Whoa.
Yeah. So they were like,
they had to cover it.
They were a bunch of badasses that went in there and just dug it out and basically tried to and pour concrete to lift it back up so it didn't like burn all the way through.
Yeah. They had to cover the whole thing in concrete and then evacuate. Nobody,
like do you know, worst shit ever.
Do you know because of Chernobyl, worldwide cancer rates went up like a couple percent?
Wow.
In the whole world.
Yeah.
Damn.
And in the surrounding areas, cancer rates went up.
Well, it's just so crazy because it's, to me, it's fascinating because I know nothing about radiation and just like, you know, when you get that close to the core and like how you get all the particles on you, like how then now you can transfer just by like visiting somebody in the hospital, like how much you actually now absorb from their radiation. And so they're like transferring this to other people that are coming to visit them. And then it was just like, it's just baffling to me because they didn't even know what they were doing and didn't know how to handle it properly.
How many people died?
Oh,
oh my God.
I mean, total millions.
Yeah.
Millions? Total if you count all the people that died.
The aftermath, years later.
Directly from it, I'm not sure. But I know it's probably worldwide since. It's been millions.
It's like a real life horror story.
You know, in Japan, when Fukushima got, you know, blasted from the tsunami, people going in to fix it or going in to do certain things, you know that you're going to go in there to die. You know you're going to go in there. And you're going to come out and you're going to be sick or you're going to get cancer in a few years. And so in Japan, and this is just to me, it's such a powerful story. You had all these elderly people in their 70s and 80s volunteering for Fukushima because they're like, I'm already old, so I'll go in there and I'll do it. Yeah. And all these people volunteering to go in there and sacrifice themselves.
Yeah, wow. And that's the thing. And through this documentary, too, you see like really the best of humanity, too, where people realize that if they didn't do anything, then like millions and millions of people were going to get affected and die. And so they're like, well, I'm going to do something. And you see that like it's pretty cool, dude.
The sad thing about this is that because of Chernobyl, Three Mile Island, Fukushima, you know, we're so afraid of nuclear power, but the reality is if done properly, especially with the new technology, they're extremely safe and clean sources of energy. Like nuclear power, literally, if we do it right, can really power the world. The problem is that we're so scared of it because when we started putting these nuclear reactors out, a lot of the technology wasn't great, and we had instances like the ones I had just mentioned. Mm-hmm. So people are like, fuck that. We don't want to mess with that. But the technology and the science around them and what we could potentially do with nuclear power, I mean, we wouldn't need oil, to power the world.
Now, are you guys, speaking of series, are you guys familiar with Agatha Christie? Do you know who that is?
No.
So she's like a 1920s author, like one of the most well-known authors. I think she sold billions of books, like one of the most... renowned authors of all time. She has a series on it's on Amazon, and Katrina and I binged it. Do you guys like murder mystery type movies or shows?
Courtney depends, does. But yes. Yeah.
This one's really good. It's because especially since it's got a really, she's known for murder mystery, plot twist, things like that. It's called ABC Murders. And
I've seen the.
It's only a 3-part series. So I think they're taking, and I don't know if you're going to see more of them come out. I believe this is one of the first one of her many novels that she's done. That they did a little 3-part, 1-hour each, 1-hour series on the ABC murders. Really fucking good.
Really,
really good. Katrina and I just finished it last night.
So it's called Agatha Christie.
No, she's the author. It's called ABC Murders.
ABC, and yeah, where's it on?
It's. I'm pretty sure it's Amazon. Maybe Doug can look
it
up.
Yeah, it is Amazon.
Oh yes, I've seen it on there. I saw it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's got the guy. I really like the guy that's the main character, and I can't think of his name, but he's in Rounders. He's what other movie is he in that I really like? He's got a couple movies that I like that he's in. But that was a really good, you know, binge one. If someone looking for something to binge through the weekend or something like
Matt
that.
Matt Damon?
Hey,
not Matt Damon.
So you guys know, you guys remember how Toys R Us went bankrupt?
Yeah.
Which was kind of a sad day. I don't know about you guys, but I had such fond memories and
lots
feelings.
Of nostalgia there, yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
That was the place. Like, if mom and dad took me to Toys R Us, I was like,
do you know
excited.
What, do you know what Toys R Us did before you finish your story that didn't exist when we were kids? Oh, there he is right there. John Malkovich.
Oh, John Malkovich. Okay. Yes, yeah.
Thank you, Doug. You know what Toys R Us did that they didn't do when I was a kid that I thought was fucking brilliant and so cool? Is for your birthday, and we did this for my nephew when he turned 5. He's now 12. So when he turned 5, we did this with him. And they would give you a gun, a scanner gun, and then you register for his birthday. And then you let him go through the store and shoot all the toys that he wants.
That he wants to register?
Yeah, that he wants, right?
Yeah.
And so then you, as kids or aunts and uncles, stuff like that, you just go on to Toys R Us and then you
It's like a wedding registry.
Yeah. Sure. But it gives the kid an experience to go in the store. I thought it was such a brilliant business move to do something like that. And it wasn't but maybe a year or two later when they started to file for Chapter 13.
Well, they're reopening.
Mm. What?
They got new investors. And what they're going to do is they're going to open up like these smaller Toys R Us stores that are like 10,000 square feet. And they're going to be more about the experience. Play areas where you could try out new toys.
See, that's smart.
And the whole idea is to give kids an experience and either buy the toys there or order them online.
That's like, the experience part, but the small store. Remember, was it KB Kids?
KB Toys.
KB Toys.
KB Toys.
Is that non-existent?
I don't think so.
Look at that up, Doug. See if that one went under,
KB
too.
KB Toy Store.
That was popular. Remember, almost every mall had a KB Toy Store. Yeah.
No, but see, think about this. For a new Toys R Us, you take your kids there and they play and have fun. And then, Mom, I want this one. Or, Dad, I want this thing that I played. Well, and you either buy it there or you buy it online.
That's why I thought this was so brilliant. That's what they tapped into that I thought was so smart. So it was crazy to see. I mean, but it's just an example. Amazon just got everybody. Yeah. And I just wonder that. Like, how can you take off with – so when did KB go as an independent company?
1999.
1,300 stores.
Wow.
And then they went out of business in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine building a company to the size of having 1,300.
You're never safe.
Yeah.
That's a reminder right there.
Wow.
If you're a company and you get big, you have to continue to compete for market share because there's a lot of stories of companies that were
evolve with the times.
Yeah, Blockbuster was huge. There was a Blockbuster in every town. How many locations were there? Gone.
Yeah. Now there's just one.
There's that one, right? Yeah, that you told me about.
Oregon.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
I feel like it's Blockbuster to me, it's more like a shame on you. Like they dropped the ball when Netflix came with them. It's tech. We were evolving. You were already starting to see MP3s. You were seeing things like that where we could go. So I feel like, I don't know, I feel like if I was running the show there, I would have had at least the smarts to kind of foresee potentially the future. But having a toy store, I don't know if I would have picked up on that. I don't know if I would have went like, especially having 1,300 and kids buying stuff. Like
here, this is the situation that some of these companies get stuck in, like Blockbuster, like Toys R Us. They get put in a situation where they have to fundamentally change their model, which costs millions and millions of dollars and could potentially lay off lots of people, or stick with what you've been doing and making money doing. And so it's a hard gamble.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds obvious to us now, but back when Blockbuster was first introduced to Netflix and laughed them out of the room, to them, it wasn't that obvious. Yeah. And they were, you know, they would have had to completely change their model because they were a store-based, you know, business. So that means they would have had to completely change their model just to survive. Which, you know, that's a tough decision. Imagine that.
Too
right?
much of smelling your own farts.
Well, exactly. Well, I hope this time it helps them out with that business strategy.
I've been meaning to ask you, Justin, before I forget, you were just talking about off air how I was asking you about the chili Uller.
Right.
For sleep, because Adam's been raving about it. Now you've been using it.
Yeah.
And you've been talking about how good your sleep is. And I wanted to know if it positively affected, because I know you said you've been sleeping better. Is it making your reflux better too?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, no, I haven't noticed any reflux, and that
weird.
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's multiple factors with that because of diet and also like time schedule wise with eating. But I still would get reflux, and I would sometimes have to get up. Usually, it was like when I was getting interrupted sleep, I would get up, and then I'd have to take some Tums because I don't know, the reflux would kind of start to go once I started to get like super hot and irritated.
Interesting.
And so I, yeah, it's been awesome, dude. Cause with the Uller, this one you can do on your phone, like Adam was describing last time. And so I have it set, that like at the perfect, like 65, I've found is like a good temperature for me to stay consistently asleep, but not feel like it's too cold to where I can notice it. But so that's the thing. It's kind of interesting. It's not like laying down and it's like freezing or cold, you know, and like, cause that I wanted it cold when it was really hot. We had that heat wave coming through, but just having a consistent temperature, it makes such an interesting difference.
It's such a game changer that I think in the future, beds are going to come with these things already a part of them.
Yeah.
It's that big of a game changer because I've been doing a lot of reading on how temperature affects your sleep and how using devices like either the Chili Pad or the Uller, you know, in terms for sleep, and the studies are remarkable. Like it makes a huge difference for people for their sleep. And I have yet to use one because I'm waiting for mine to come in the mail. I can't wait to use it to try out, but it's a game. Cool. From what I've read, this is one of the biggest sleep game changers that exists, like bigger than almost anything else that any single thing that you can do.
Well, it's interesting too, because Courtney noticed, like I kind of thrash a bit when I sleep, like I'll turn from one side to the other. I'm more of a side sleeper than I am on my back. So, but she's like, yeah, you've been pretty much solid in one position. I wake up in the same position. Wow. And it's just like, it's tripping me out.
Now the Uller has the app right on the phone. Mm-hmm. So you can control the technology. It also allows you to turn to make it louder or less or quieter. So make it a little stronger or not.
Yeah. So the Chili Pad that is just the original version. It's a little bit cheaper. The unit's a little bit bigger. You have to control with the remote. It doesn't have the three levels of white noise. And the way the three levels of white noise work is, if I wanted to cool, like for example, if I forgot to turn it on right now, I leave mine on constantly now, by the way, because the motor on it doesn't suck that much energy. It's easier for me just to set the temperature I really like, just let it run all day long, and it's just,
and it's water. There's no EMF, so the pad itself is just water.
Right. But if I had forgot to turn it on, and my bed is warmed up to like 72, and I like it at 54 or whatever, and I want it really cold, and I'm about to go to bed in the next hour or two, I can turn the motor all the way up to the third level. And even then, it's still, to me, it's not. I think the noise sounds great. But you have three levels, so you could put it on really quiet. The third level down, which is what I do now, is I just keep it on the lowest level.
Well, white noise helps people sleep anyway.
Right. Yeah, so it's just
on the middle one.
Is that what you do? Yeah. So I just, so that part is cool. That is something that I tell people, though, if you like it at a specific temperature, and if it's really cold like I do, I think it's smarter just to keep it on, and it's not pulling that much energy. I mean, I haven't seen a difference on my bill. Like, I mean, this one coming up will be the first one where I've had it for a full 30 days. So I'll tell you if I think.
Yeah.
And you're still not waking up to pee in the night.
I mean, I've had a couple nights where now, so but even having a night of sleeping all the way through is unbelievable for me. So most nights I sleep all the way through. There's still, what will still get me, because I you know, I still think that I have a small bladder. The other day I worked out later in the day, like 5-6 o'clock at night, and train. And when I do that, I drink like half a gallon to a gallon of water. So I can't help but still get up and have to go pee. But on a normal day, which has been great, and going to bed, if it's cool, I'll sleep the entire night. And like what Justin's saying, I'm not tossing and turning. I hit the pillow and I'm out.
I can't wait.
Yeah, no,
I'm waiting for mine.
Of all the sponsors that we have, I mean, I love all the products. There's not there except for, you know, I talk trash about some of the ones I don't use a lot. But for sure, I definitely think I use the Uller, and I value that partnership more than almost anything else that we've done yet. And I did not see that coming. Like, I didn't even know anything about those. Mm-hmm. Taylor was the first person to show me it. And when we started to use it, I was just blown away. So I'm sold forever on that thing. And it's depending on what you can afford. I mean, you can get crazy with it and get like the Cadillac version where you have the, you know, cow king size. Both sides are controlled, so his and her, she can be at one temperature, you can be at another, and you could spend a lot of money on something on like the badass one, or you can go with just the original one and save it, spend a couple $100, which is not bad at all for what you're getting for it.
Well, we got the biggest discount out of all the other.
That was dope. That's one of the things I do appreciate too about, and this is all, you know, the credit Taylor, because Taylor does this for us. He's really adamant about, if we work with a brand that he knows other companies are working with, we will take less money in a, as a partnership, in order to give our audience a better deal than what anybody else is. So that's something that we don't talk a lot about that on air and tell people that, but that's the truth. And we try and work that out with almost, now some sponsors, they just won't do it. They won't negotiate, and they have their discount that they do, and it's generic and it is what it is. But some companies are flexible where they're like, okay, well, if you guys are willing to take less money, we can obviously give more to your audience. And we always opt to do that if we can.
Of course.
So
absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's pretty
excellent.
Cool.
What's this thing in Canada with the hyenas that you said you were going to bring up? You told me to remind you.
Yeah, no, like I guess in the Ice Age, they found remnants of hyenas that were like wolf size. And they came over that Bering Strait landmass, and they found traces from these teeth that they found like within this bone pile, and they traced it back to hyenas of all creatures. I guess they got outcompeted, but I had no idea we had hyenas here in North America.
Wow,
yeah.
Have you ever seen a hyena up close?
No.
No, it's like at the zoo.
No, I've heard it's pretty. They're
big.
They're sketchy too.
Yeah, they're fucking huge, dude.
They're dope to watch hunt.
They're huge, and they have one of the most powerful bites.
Yeah,
that you can. And, I mean, they're dangerous predators to deal with for sure.
Yeah,
but they're crazy looking.
Well, I think a pack of hyenas, they'll take down some of the biggest animals out there.
Oh, dude, yeah, you get four or five hyenas will scare a lion. Yeah. I believe. They're pretty crazy.
That is crazy.
I think it's just interesting because there's always like they find new species that existed like simultaneously with each other. Like it was eating and scavenging for like mammoths and, you know, like saber tooths were around. It's like, it's just crazy to see what that like landscape probably looked like back in the day.
Oh, it's crazy. At some point, who's that one guy, Graham Hancock, who talks about?
Yeah.
How there's water erosion on like the Sphinx,
yes,
in Egypt. So he's like, you know, this thing is a lot older than we think, because water wasn't here until, you know, it wasn't here when we thought this was built. It was way before that. So
yeah.
He tries to make that argument.
And if you go like and look over the Great Plains and you see from a bird's eye perspective, you can really see how large masses of these glaciers had to have like quickly gone through and just carved out our landscape.
Yeah.
So it makes a lot of sense.
He's kind of interesting to listen to.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the article that I shared in my Insta story yesterday on Klay Thompson and Iguodala?
No.
Of course not. Of course it was sports. I know you didn't fucking read it. I was looking at Justin.
Yeah.
Justin,
did you read it? No, I missed it. No.
So this was great. My buddy shared this with me first, and I'm so glad he shared the actual article so I could share it with the audience, those that didn't click over and read it. Iguodala is probably, if not my favorite player, one of my favorite players on the Warriors team. I just think he's extremely humble. On any other team, he'd be a starter for sure. When he came over to the Warriors, he accepted the six-man role, which is basically coming off the bench, and just shows you what kind of humility he has. He's one of the highest IQ players, and he just wrote a book called The Sixth Man. And in the book, he does he has this little excerpt from in there that talks about Klay Thompson. And they had this team building exercise where coach went around and asked all the players in the room, like, what was like your highest moment ever playing as a Warrior? And everyone's going around sharing. And when it gets to Klay's turn to share, everyone assumed he was going to say that the highest moment was the day he scored 37 points in a quarter against Sacramento, because that was an NBA record, but he didn't. Instead,
I did read this.
Instead, he said, my best moment was the one night I caught a pass and I was like 50 feet from the basketball hoop and I was about to shoot it. And all of a sudden I hear Andre being like, what the fuck, Klay? You're 50 feet out. And I thought about it for a second and shot it anyway. it went in, and I was like, yeah.
Yeah,
fuck
right.
You. Yeah, Andre.
He's talking shit.
Fuck you. We all had a good laugh about that. I was like, wow, really, dog? That was your best moment?
Yeah. I love that.
That's awesome. Yeah. No, it just highlights the chemistry that the guys all have, and I think that's so great that they can talk and act and be that way. And I mean, we talk all the time when people ask me questions about what it's like working with you guys and how we are on air and are we really like that. I mean, man, I think that if we dig on each other more than anybody else that I've ever met, and I think that's it speaks to the chemistry and the relationship, and I think it's so important to success, and they're a great example of that, and I can't wait to read the book.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
This Quaz brought to you by Organifi. For those days you fall short on getting your organic veggies or whole food nutrition, Organifi fills the gap with laboratory-tested, certified organic superfoods to help give your health and performance the added edge. Try Organifi totally risk-free for 60 days by going to Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com. And use the coupon code MINDPUMP for 20% off at checkout.
First question is from Critter Marie 87. You guys talk about intuitive eating. If you want to do a cut to lose body fat or spend time in a surplus to gain some muscle, would you go back to tracking intake or just consciously reduce or add food?
Personally, 100% yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
100% yes.
I'm with you. Look, okay, think of intuitive eating like this. You're on the freeway. Everything's smooth. You're driving. You put it on cruise control. Leave it on cruise control until shit changes.
Time to race.
And you need to hit your brakes.
Someone drives by and pipes you.
Yeah, or you gotta, or you're about to drive.
Go time. You got to take it out of cruise now.
Are you challenging me, sir? Yeah.
Or you're about to drive recklessly like Adam's talking about.
Yeah.
No, I mean, here's the thing. Intuitive eating should, the goal is to get to a point where a majority of the way you eat and live is intuitive. You take care of yourself. You eat foods because you enjoy them for their true value. You can enjoy food for its hedonistic value sometimes, but most of the time you eat things because they're healthy. Your body weight settles at a natural, healthy body weight, which is relatively lean, decent amount of strength and muscle. But then you want to take your body to another level. You want to push it to a new level. Well, then yes, you're going to have to, or you don't have to, but ideally you would track so that you don't fall into this trying to intuitively build and intuitively cut past a certain point gets very difficult because there's nothing intuitive about it.
You know what sucks about this question is I remember when we first started talking about intuitive eating and we had to write a guide about it because so many people didn't know what the fuck it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now turned into another buzz term. It's turned into something that everyone's talking about and it's another way to get clicks and it's another way to sell people on ideas. And it's like, man, we're starting to bastardize something that I think is really good and really important for people to understand. But the truth of the matter is that most people are not ready to intuitive eat. When I think back of all the clients that I trained, there's not a single client that, you know, first hiring me, I would say, hey, we're going to try an intuitive eat right now. None. All my clients I had to educate first on what is a carb? What is a protein? How many calories do you need? What's a lot? What's a little? What do we do? What do we eat if we want to lean out? What do we eat if we want to gain? All that stuff, you have to do that for a while to really have a grasp of what it looks like and in order for you to start to intuitive eat. And then when you're intuitive eating, you're basically still guessing. I don't care what you say. And if you're just trying to be healthy and have a healthy relationship with food, I think it's a very good place to be and where we all should strive to be. But if you have, you know, a photo shoot coming up or you've got summer and you've got the beach ahead of you and you want to get in the best shape you've ever been in your life, or you're competing or you're doing something where you want to make moves and you want to change your physique, 100% try. I mean, still with all the experience that I have, if I all of a sudden decided that, hey, you know what? We're going to Hawaii in 4 weeks, and I really want to be in some of the best shape I've been in a while. You bet your ass. First thing I'm going to do is turn on my Fat Secret app again, load my food in, track my steps, and start monitoring where I'm at. Yeah. Because what I want, if I really have a goal like that and a time frame, I want to make the most moves in the shortest period of time. Now, if I just want to live like I am right now, I'm not tracking anything. I'm not paying attention to any of that stuff.
Everybody has intuition, but you have to train it to be correct first.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, yeah, you got to have correct intuition to be able to trust it. And so the only way to do that is to do the work leading into that, which is the tracking part of it. So that's really the ultimate, the peak of where you want to get to within your nutrition plan for yourself. But definitely have to put the work in.
Think about this, for example, for a second. When you're at a point where you are eating intuitively, that is a place of balance. Okay, so what does balance look like? Healthy. You're going to be relatively lean. You're going to have good muscle and good strength. You're going to be able to enjoy food sometimes just for the taste of it, but most of the time you're eating it because it's healthy. But it's not a place of extremes. So if I want to get shredded, then I need to track.
Right, that's a place of extreme.
Because it's not balanced. I don't walk around at 6% body fat all the time because that's not my balance. My balance is around 10 to 12% body fat. When I eat intuitively, I'm always about, I'd say 9 to 12% body fat is where I can fall when I'm eating intuitively. If I want to get down to 6% body fat, I'm going to have to track. It's just there's nothing intuitive about it. My body doesn't want to be there. And I have to kind of push myself. If I want to get my body weight up really high and I want to get really, really strong and push, let's say I want to get my deadlift above 600 pounds, can I do that while eating intuitively? No. Intuitively, my body, that's not a place of balance for my body. So that's the thing you need to understand. And so that's why I think intuitive eating is real important for people like competitors, because when you're pre-contest, yes, you're on a diet. But in between that, when you're if you want to just maintain your health, look, here's the deal. If you want longevity, if you want to be fit and healthy forever, the most of your time should be spent eating intuitively. You need to earn it first, number one. You need to get to the point where you can do that. And that's where you're going to spend most of your time. But if you're trying to get down and get lean and do a bunch of different things with your body, you're going to have to track. You're going to have to know what to put, when to push and when to pull back.
It's like shooting a target 100 yards away and you have the option to use a scope or not use a scope. And so you better have shot that gun a lot for a very long time if you're going to try and shoot something that far away without your fucking scope.
Right. And somebody who hasn't done the work, because here's the thing. First of all, most of us don't know what real hunger feels like. We have cravings. We don't have real hunger because we've never gone without food for longer than 6 or 8 hours, you know. When we sleep, we don't have food. Other than that, we have food every 4 hours. So we don't know what real hunger is. So most of our associations with food revolve around, context. It's breakfast time. It's lunchtime. It's dinner time. Or stress. Or anxiety. Or celebration. So our relationship to food is not something you want to. It's not something you can rely on being intuitive about. If I relied on my intuitive abilities when I've never really worked on those abilities, my intuition is going to tell me to eat fucking 5 burritos for lunch and have pizza for dinner and then have another and have some cake afterwards.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So it takes time to get there. And the way you get there is tracking, pay attention to how your body responds to certain foods, maybe the occasional use of fasting, depending on the individual, learning how to disconnect your emotions from food at times when like they're stressed out. Okay, I don't reach for food when I'm always stressed out. Let me figure out what's going on. It takes some time. But once you get there, the cool thing is now it's a very comfortable, relaxing place to be, and you're going to be healthy, because what ends up happening with a lot of people is they stress about their food so much that it's a stress. It's not something that's relaxed. You talk to some of these people who track all the time or who are constantly counting every calorie, and they've done it for years, their nutrition is a source of stress in their lives, mm-hmm. and it shouldn't be. Or at least that's not a way you can live forever. That's impossible. Or maybe if it is, I feel sorry for you because it's a terrible way to live. That's where intuitive eating comes into play. But if you're trying to push your body, remember, you're moving out of balance. That's going to require some careful calculation, and tracking is part of that.
By the way, you can get our intuitive guide at mindpumpmedia.com.
Next question is from CDT T. Young. What are your thoughts on protective gear such as elbow or knee wraps or sleeves? For me specifically, I've had an ACL and meniscus tear and feel the compression really helps when I get to my working sets for squatting.
Okay.
Love it. You look serious as fuck when you wear all this stuff.
So here's a good rule of thumb. Unless you're a competitor and you're going to be competing with these aids, in which case you need to practice training in them. If you're just trying to be fit and healthy, let your natural weakest link be the limiting factor for how much weight you use. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if my low back can only handle me safely with good control, good stability, deadlift, 400 pounds. Then adding an aid like a weight belt to get me up to 450 pounds, it's probably not the greatest idea of constantly working out that way.
Well, you greatly increase your risk by doing that.
You do, because I'm now trying to get to modify my weakest link so that I can push my body even harder. And you're right, it increases your risk of injury. So if you feel like your knee is not stable and wearing knee wraps has you squat more, my recommendation is let your knee be the limiting factor. That's what's going to tell you how much weight you can use. And slowly allow that to get stronger so that you can use more weight. Now, here's the thing with knee wraps, okay? I've used them before. I went through a stint of using knee wraps because why? They make you stronger. They do. You lift more weight when you use knee wraps. If you've ever used legit knee wraps, you're going to add 30 pounds to your squat.
It's the version of the slingshot for your squat.
Yes.
The same.
That spring and
yeah, the same concept.
Elastic energy.
Yeah, of our boys' slingshot with Mark Bell's slingshot for your bench press. It's a similar concept when you wrap knee wrap like that. That's what you're getting.
Right. And now here's what I felt. So I did it for about a year, and I think I got my squat over just over 400 pounds, and I was so proud of my whatever. But I noticed that my kneecaps started getting sore. And here's the thing with joints. They're not all the same. So if you look at the knee joint, for example, and this really blew me away. When you look at the knee joint, the patella kind of floats over the femur. And it runs, it kind of slides on a groove every time you flex and extend your knee. Well, if I'm adding a knee wrap and pushing my kneecap super hard onto that groove with weight, that doesn't sound like a good idea, does it, over time? Like I'm going to wear the bottom of that kneecap out and potentially cause a problem like chondromalacia underneath my patella. And I noticed that. I noticed my knees actually started feeling worse. So I don't think these things protect like people think they do. They help. They let you lift more weight, but I don't think they're protective. In some cases, they may actually be bad for your joints.
And unless you have, well, not unless, but I mean, you could be diagnosing yourself wrong too, because there's a, what's that called? I don't know the actual name for it, but we used to call it jumper's knee.
Oh, and it's a weird name, Oschlag.
Yeah,
something
right. We used to call it jumper's knee.
What is it, Justin?
Yeah, I think you're right. I can't pronounce it.
Damn it.
Don't even try it. Call it jumper knee.
Raised tendon or
whatever.
Jumper's knee.
Something like that. And I do know that. And we
Oschlotters
or Oschlag Godders.
When you wear like one of those wraps around the knee and it pushes down on it, it does relieve a lot of the pain while you squat or jump or do movements like that. So if you're getting relief from that, you may be self-diagnosing incorrectly, and it could be something along those lines. And so where I would always refer you to a doctor and have that looked at and find out exactly what's going on.
Yeah,
with
you're talking about patellar tendonitis. There's another term, and I can't
Did you look up jumper's knee? Because I know that's.
I did, but it's not the same. It's not the same thing. It's going to kill me now.
No, I know. You got that in my head too.
Because I trained lots of clients.
Yeah.
With these types
of
issues.
Yeah, I've had a few.
And you can really help them a lot by working on hip mobility, ankle mobility, quadricep flexibility makes a big difference.
Well, yeah, and I just have to echo, because it is like when you start using these wraps and these things to try and maintain like a level of fitness that you've been like identifying with. So this is all goes back to like identifying with like my strength has always been these numbers, this weight, this. Like when you have like an injury, a lot of times it's tough because it's going to take work for you to, you know, build yourself back up to that where everything's stabilized and can support you properly in the kinetic chain like it used to. So do the work. It's going to pay off dividends down the road. I know it sucks to, downgrade a bit, you know, in terms of like the weight that you're using, but it's going to be the best for your body at the end of the day.
I don't think a lot of people don't realize that some of these aids, because it's allowing them to, there you go. Oscar Schlotters.
Oschken Schlotters.
It is,
Oscar right.
Schlotters. It is jumper's knee. See?
Yeah.
All right. We're
excellent. All right. Excellent. What I was going to say is a lot of people don't realize that using these tools that allow them to lift more weight oftentimes can actually set you up for more problems and worse problems in the future. So keep that in mind. And I know, look, I'm the same way. We get caught up in the damn, if I wear the knee wraps, I can lift 30 more pounds.
It's ego talking to
you. Yeah, you know, and that's what I want to do. And it's like, oftentimes it's not worth it.
Mm-hmm. Next question is from Erica in Texas. What advice do you have for mental blocks during a lift? I get in my own head on heavy squats and tend to psych myself out of the lift.
This I used to run to with sometimes with female clients where they were afraid to lift a heavy weight, especially overhead or with a squat. And they'd be scared of hurting themselves or the weight crushing them, not able to support it. Here's what I would recommend. First off, learn how to use the safeties on your squat rack. So set the safeties so that if you go to the bottom of your squat and you can't make it back up, you just set the weight down on the safeties. That's it. That alone would give people confidence, because I used to show people, I go, pretend like, well, you can't lift the weight and you're safe.
I love just adding weight and like to the rack and then standing in it and like getting comfortable and acclimating to heavier weight and then racking it back again.
That's an old school technique right there. That's the first time I ever started squatting heavier weight. I was lifting, and this was like early 20s. And I was with a bunch of, you know, old school bodybuilder guys. And I was weak as fuck. I think back then I could never squat more than 185. And I remember he's like, let's put three plates on. I'm like, I can't even
do
two plates.
You're going to kill me.
Yeah, I'm like, I can't even do two plates. Yeah. He's like, no, I just want your body to feel that type of weight. And I was scared to death. I remember just unracking it, racking it in, my legs shaking and feeling. And he was there to spot me, make sure there. I didn't squat into anything, just unracked it, stepped back into the position to do it, re-racked it, did that enough times. And then before you knew it, when I put on two plates, I felt way more comfortable. So that's a really good strategy.
It is. Another thing too is to help you kind of get out of your own head. First off, set the safeties, like I said, so you know that you're safe. Get in there, get tight, and get angry. Sometimes getting angry makes a big damn difference. I still get intimidated sometimes by really, really heavy lifts. It's not so much that I think I'm going to get buried by the weight, but I think like, oh, I don't want to hurt myself. Mm-hmm. In which case I get tight and I get real mad. Now, is that always a good thing? Maybe not. But I've noticed that, especially for female clients, and I don't know if it's because of they weren't told to lift heavy or they were afraid of lifting heavy, but just giving, like I would have female clients who could dumbbell press the 20s and I'd give them 15s and they'd freak out. Oh, 15 pounds. I don't want to do 15 pounds.
It's so funny you say that. Like, I was so the guy that like every workout I had to hype myself up and get like in that angry state because I was always trying to crush it, you know, like every workout, like I had to like put max effort out there. And like, so yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, it pays off. Like if you can get into a certain, you know, mental state of mind or frame and you can replicate that and like have like a ritual going into like the heavier lifts, that is going to help and get your CNS sort of prepped that way.
And here's the other thing. This is one thing that I found a lot with people who are afraid to lift heavy. And again, it was usually women that were in this category. The growth that they would experience through the weights, not physical growth, but the emotional growth, the confidence that they would get. Because if I got a female client who's afraid to lift what looked like a big and heavy weight to her, and I got her to lift it, and then she got confident enough to challenge herself with weight, that feeling just emanated, and you could see it in the rest of their life. They would walk around more confident, taller. I had a woman tell me that the most empowering thing she ever did was get stronger with weights. She's like, when I got strong, she's like, it made me feel just more capable of putting my suitcase in the overhead compartment, more capable of, you know, carrying more groceries. And I just felt more confident in my body.
There's also something to be said about inching up really slow. Like, I know, I remember like a bunch of idiot boys we were when we used to lift. You can't use fives and tens. You know, it was
you go up
quarters and quarters and plates. You weren't allowed to use five and tens. If you were squatting, benching, deadlifting, anything like that, it's like quarters and plates are the only thing that you can add. And that's just a stupid mentality. And I think that, you know, whatever.
The two and a halves are wonderful for
right. If you obviously, there's obviously a weight you feel comfortable with and there's a weight you don't. So adding 2.5 pounds on each side to the weight you're comfortable with and getting comfortable with that and then adding 2.5 every week like that until all before you know it, you've added 20 to 25 pounds on each side and you're like, oh, holy shit. So there's something to be said about that also. And there's something to be said about dropping the reps. You know, even our programs, like I think the lowest rep range in any of them is 5, right? Do we have anything lower than 5? I don't think we call for maybe do we have a 3-set or a 5-on-1?
Yeah.
One to five sometimes.
Yeah, 1 to 5 you'll sometimes see where you could do like singles, doubles.
Right, triples. So I would have somebody drop down in reps. There's nothing wrong with I planned to do 5 and that was what I went under, but then when I felt it and I'm moving it, I might only do 3 and get used to with only – and that's something I didn't do either. I didn't do a lot of singles, doubles, and triples, and part of what helped me inch my weight up was I used to only grab weight that I could get about 5 times, and that was it. And maybe I fell short 1 where – and now I would start to push myself and be like, oh, maybe I'll only do 2 of these reps or 3 of these reps.
Next question from Farmer Pear. Have you ever thought you may have dealt with depression, but was never really sure? If so, what was it like for you? How is it to work with and train with people who are suffering from depression?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, I do want to first off say that none of us are doctors or experts in depression. But I can safely say that I think we've all dealt with it in one way or another because we're humans, right? And I've definitely trained people who have dealt with depression. Now, personally, for me, I have felt true depression a couple of times. Once was when I had a family member who was fighting cancer, and it was a long battle, and she eventually lost. That was a very difficult time. The other one was when I got divorced. That one was a bit difficult as well. The thing about depression that I found, for me at least, is it's hard to realize just how bad it is when you're in it. Mm. I feel bad, but I'm pretty good at, you know, distracting myself or doing things that can make me feel better, like exercise or being with loved ones. It's hard for me to really realize it until I'm out of it. Once I come out of it, I look back and go, wow, I was really not feeling good. And for me, it feels like just a lack of zest. You know, I just didn't feel like anything really could, you know, make me feel super, super good. Exercise, though, has always been, during those 2 periods of my life, my workouts saved my life, always. I never stopped. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm probably more consistent when I'm feeling terrible because I know how what a positive effect it has on me. As far as clients are concerned, I've had many clients whose emotional state changed dramatically over the course of the years of training them. I can think of several right now off the top of my head. I had one lady who came in who was just, she had some really bad chronic illnesses, finally, you know, had kind of fought them and beat them, got divorced afterwards, just had a whole string of terrible events. Then she came to hire me and was just mean. She was just a mean person. She would just talk at me mean. She could tell she was very short, but I could tell that she was just hurting. And so I started training her, and it was amazing, the transformation. It took a while, but after, you know, over the course of the years of training her, I think I trained her for about 3 years, she became this just pleasant person. And she would tell me, she used to say, Sal, when I first came to see you, I was very dark and very depressed. And she goes, an exercise lifted me out of it enough for me to be able to work on myself and you know, improve my health in all aspects. And I've seen that time and time again. I'm not an expert on medication for depression or therapy, but the studies show that exercise and fitness, in fact, some professionals are trying to say that they want exercise to be frontline defense.
Which is exciting.
Yeah, so like someone comes with mild to moderate forms of depression, right before giving the medication, they'll say, okay, I want you to start exercising first and let's see how that improves.
Yeah, I remember having a conversation. My brother's wife's a therapist. And I remember because one of my clients was suffering from severe depression and I'm pretty sure was on medication. But when she started working out with me, this is back when I was trying to structure like the full experience for clients to where we would go even like 5-day-a-week type of schedules. And so what we do in between our actual resistance training days is I would go with her like on these hikes in Los Gatos, and we'd go out there in the sun and we'd go on these like slow hikes and we'd just get in, you know, excess amount of activity that was like more recuperative for that day and do some mobility in between, and just like that alone. And then also, you know, just talking and conversing and having somebody listen, like between the combo of all those things, I was like, wow, it was amazing to see like, just like traces of mood change. And I was talking to my brother's wife about it, and she was like, that's really interesting, because she had similar anecdotes from some of her patients that were applying like more cardiovascular work, and then we're getting into weight training as well.
Yeah, from what I'm familiar with, the two natural things that positively affect depression the most that are natural that you can do are three things. Exercise properly, get good sleep, but sometimes that's not an issue. Oftentimes people with depression sleep too much.
Right.
And the third thing is sunshine. Those three things that I've read studies on seem to have the best positive effects.
I would say strength train and sun. Mm. So because one of the things about you got to be careful with somebody with depression and that's down like that, and then hammering them in like a circuit based type of training,
yeah, or punishment.
Yeah. So this is also speaking from experience, right? So I've personally dealt with depression twice in my life. One time I didn't know I was. The second time I was ready for it. The first time happened when I short sold my house. I bought my house early when I was 22, and it was a very big deal for me. Coming from not having much growing up, or most people listening to the show know my story, it was a big deal for me to have a perfect credit score, to be able to afford a house. That was a major, major accomplishment for me. And I had the house for over 8 years when we went through the whole dip with the economy, and my house at one point was basically upside down $100,000. And I was still okay financially, but my buddy at that time who was into real estate told me, he goes, you know, it would be smart for you right now, why everybody is getting homes foreclosed on, to short sell this, walk away from it, get out of this loan, save your cash, and then, you know, let take the ding on your credit, then let it rebound, and then be in a different position 3 to 5 years later. And I struggled with that for a really long time. And I finally let him convince me that it was the smart strategy to do. And it was, it really was. It was the smart move for sure. I ended up saving a bunch of money, and it was the right thing to do. But I went through this bout of depression for probably somewhere between 6 months and maybe even a year that I just was not myself. And I didn't, like you, to your point, Sal, I didn't know that I was in it while I was in it. I just, looking back and thinking about how dark that time was for me, just how much I wasn't taking care of myself physically, where my relationships were, my attitude, the type of negative shit that was happening in my life. Like, it was just a really kind of bad time. And after the fact, I realized what it really came from, and it was because I really identified with that person. I really identified with my credit score. You know, I really identified with being this person who made it and was successful, and that really fucked with me when that went away and that got stripped from me. And so that was my first experience with that, and I had fallen off of exercise. I'd fallen off a lot of things. And the second time, which was even a harder bout of depression to battle, but at least this time I went in kind of knowing or recognizing it before it hit all the way, was just recently. It wasn't that long ago on the podcast when I've shared some of this journey, was when I came off of testosterone. You know, for 4 years consistently, I was taking, you know, high doses of testosterone. I was on a therapeutic dose before that, which was very mild, and that really wasn't a big deal to me. But when I started competing and I started ramping the doses up and got to a point at the professional level where I was taking, you know, 500 milligrams of testosterone a week and doing that consistently month in, month out for years, for 4 years, and then coming off of that, man, that just... I had never felt like that before, where I just didn't want to work out. I didn't want to do anything. And then on top of that, I was like, I knew I was feeling that way. And I thought, okay, I need to find things that I love and that I'm passionate about. And one of those things is basketball. And so I decided to go down. I was like, I couldn't get the motivation to even work out. So I was like, okay, I know exercise is important while I'm going through this. I can't seem to muster up the energy to go lift weights. So let me go, you know, exercise through playing ball. I love playing ball. And it was the second time that I was at the gym playing ball and having an incredible game, feeling great, and I tore my Achilles. And that was just like the fucking straw that broke the camel's back for me. I could not believe that happened to me. And I remember like looking up into the sky, you know, those moments in your life where you're just like, what are you trying to tell me, God? What is this? And, you know, at that point, this is when I started to really dive back into listening to music, and I started to read more again. And that really kind of helped pull me out. And so the advice that I give to people that are in moments like this or have felt this is to latch on to the things that make you really happy. And that could be family for you. It could be music like me. It could be snowboarding. It could be basketball. It could be some forms of entertainment. But things that you can control. Like, I couldn't control not like instantly my hormone levels. I was going to have to go through this rough patch. It was inevitable. What I had done to myself hormonally, I could get all the sunlight in the world, exercise, and I wasn't going to all of a sudden just rebound and be back to high testosterone levels. I was going to have to go through this thing, or I was going to have to give back in and say, fuck it, I'm going to get back on testosterone so I don't feel this way. And that was really, really hard for me to do that. I mean, I had the stack ready to go always, like, and I was always thinking like, fuck this, like, this is getting so hard. I just want to take a shot of testosterone and feel back to normal again. And I didn't. And this lasted for almost a year working through on the podcast. And the things that got me out of that was reading and music for me, because I could no longer play sports. So if you're somebody that's listening and that's potentially you, the advice, aside from what the boys are saying right now, with I think is true, sun, exercise, those things are extremely important. But latch on to the things that make you happy. You know, latch on to the things that you find joy in that you can control. And bury yourself into those things, whether that be reading and music or sports or whatever it may be. But fine. And I had to dig deep back into like kind of childhood stuff. Like when I was in high school, I was heavy into music. And as I got older, I kind of like whatever about it. I didn't care. And I got busy and cared more about money and work and shit like that. And so I started revisiting things like that, that gave me joy and filled my cup. So look for those things that, and they may be deep and a long time ago, that fill your cup. And focus on that. That helped a lot.
Excellent. Go to mindpumpfree.com and download our guides. They're all absolutely free. You can also find us all on Instagram. You can find Adam at mindpumpadam, Justin at mindpumpjustin, and me at mindpumpsal.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.